Hello listeners, welcome to today's episode of Simply Save Podcast. There have been several new fund offers that are getting lined up. Since last week, we have already seen 9 new funds getting launched. And for the year, we have seen close to 100 new funds getting launched. While this gives several options to investors, but at the same time, it can add to an investor's confusion. In today's episode of Simply Save Podcast, I'm joined by Vishal Thavan, founder of Plan Ahead Wealth Advisors, who will be helping us make sense of this NFO rush and is also here to talk to us about how investors should decide which NFOs to pick and which ones to avoid. Hi Vishal, welcome to Simply Save Podcast. Hope you're doing fine.
Hi Josh, I'm very well, thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
So Vishal, as you must be seeing, you know, there are several NFOs that we are seeing right now, and quite a few of them are actually, you know, industry first kind of NFOs. We have not seen, you know, those kind of schemes as yet in the industry. So what's your sense, you know, how should retail investors especially look at these kind of funds, and, you know, do they merit a place in a retail investor's portfolio? What's your thought on this?
So I think the good news is clearly that, you know, a lot of what you're seeing today in NFOs is industry firsts, and therefore it makes it a slightly more nuanced decision for an investor as compared to earlier, where you had a lot of sort of me too NFOs coming in, where it was much easier because there was merit in just looking at the track record of the category and trying to pick the better performers within the category that already have a track record. It's very important when investors are looking at NFOs, especially retail investors, that they step back and start to ask themselves how this fits into their overall portfolio. Ultimately, you know, each of these decisions on allocating money is a standalone decision in the mind of an investor, but actually it needs to be part of a bigger picture. So it's a bit like a jigsaw puzzle where you start to fit in the pieces and ensure that the piece that you're putting in fits in with the rest of the jigsaw puzzle. Otherwise, it will be out of place. So our recommendation is, first of all, investors need to be clear about what their core portfolio needs to look like and what their satellite portfolio will look like. Once they're clear about what components go into their core and what goes into their satellite, then they need to look at whether this particular NFO is coming into either of these two pieces. If yes, then obviously one needs to move to the next decision, which is how much to allocate. And second is that, do I want to allocate right away or do I want to wait before I allocate?
And, you know, also, you know, for any investor, they would have limited size of funds that they can deploy. And, you know, we are seeing, you know, so many NFOs. I mean, one NFO is different than the other. So how should they balance this practical constraint that, you know, they would have limited savings that they can deploy every month to a fund, plus, you know, how many funds they could then possibly have in their overall portfolio? You know, how do they balance this kind of a conundrum, so to speak?
Again, a very important question to be able to answer. And it goes back to the core and satellite framework that I was referring to. I think within a core set of investments, I think it's very important to identify for investors how much of their allocation will be domestic in India and how much of it will be international. We are strong believers that whether you are a retail investor or a high net worth investor, it's very important to diversify your portfolio geographically to be able to protect from country specific risks. And a key to asset allocation will actually come from being able to do this geographical diversification. So therefore, once you've got this clear that you have a certain percentage that you want to allocate within your core portfolio to Indian equities and international equities, it becomes much easier for you to figure how much you want to put into specific geographies, for example. Let's take, you know, the reality that international investments are the range of offerings has only started to expand more recently. If you go back to 5 years ago, the universe of options that were available were fairly limited. In the last few years, you've seen a large expansion of options available. And while some of those can go into core, a lot of them are what we would call satellite options, which investors may want to look at. So it's very, very important for an investor to make this distinction very clearly and write it down so that he can be able to visualize what his overall portfolio will look like. There's another point that you made, which is per month. And I think that's a very, very important point. There's this fear of missing out that comes very often with new offerings, just like with IPOs and everything else. And it makes us believe that if we don't participate today, then we won't be able to participate. And our view has always been that in markets which are expensive, and the reality is most markets across the globe are today valued at levels which are above their long-term averages, one will need to build this allocation gradually and carefully. And therefore, if you're using an SIP or an STP kind of strategy, it is actually a good idea to be able to do that.
Right. So from what I gather, what you are saying is that it is important to make sure that, even if you get into a new fund, that it adds certain diversification to your overall portfolio. It should not be just for the sake of it, because it's a new fund or maybe the marketing is a bit aggressive, that you think that this is the time to basically the FOMO, right? So that's what you're saying, right? That it should add certain diversification to the portfolio. Then you go for it. Otherwise, you can might as well skip it.
Absolutely. And the other myth that is very important to break is that something at 10 rupees NAV is better than something at a 20 rupee NAV. The fact remains that an NAV is only a derived number of the value of the underlying stocks divided by the number of units. And therefore, whether you're buying something at 10 or 15 or 20 or 100 rupees NAV or even 1,000 rupees NAV, it doesn't dictate what is likely to be the future performance and outcome that one will get. So therefore, that's another reason why investors need to be careful that they don't end up buying something because it appears cheaper because it costs 10 rupees as compared to something else which costs and has a higher NAV.
Also, I wanted to ask you that now we are, even seeing funds of very kind of very exotic sectors, that maybe few investors, probably even the slightly more evolved investors may not understand. So should retail investors then, maybe skip such fund offerings, that are kind of something that they can't probably even start to understand, where I'm coming from. So how should they look at it? I mean, does it help that at least they have some understanding of the sector, when there is a, some exotic theme underlying the fund or there is a sector that is a pretty, pretty new sector. So is that understanding also important?
So I think it's important to look at whenever you get thematic sectoral kind of opportunities to, first of all, understand once again where it fits into your portfolio. Because that will decide, number one, whether you will allocate, and number two is if you allocate, how much will you allocate? I think the social pressure with investing, unfortunately, tends to be very high. And, as much as one would want to keep how you invest very personal, because ultimately, as an investor, your goals are personal. What you want your money to do is personal. When you require the money back is personal. We do find that there is very often a tendency for investments to get discussed among friends, family, etc. And people tend to mirror what their friends and family are doing. Our strong recommendation is stay away from that. Pick products on their fundamentals. And what I mean by fundamentals is not just looking at whether the last 1 year, 3 year, 5 year track record is good, but essentially what is causing those returns to happen? And are those returns replicable in the future? Because of something that is happening in the environment today. I think those are very, very crucial decisions to be taken. And a good overview on the sector is important. Though, to be fair, the reason why one goes to a mutual fund is because one expects that the choices on which stocks to pick within the sector and why to pick those stocks will be taken by a professional fund manager who spends all his time doing that for his bread and butter. And you're actually paying out a fee to him or her to do that particular job.
I was trying to, point at certain exotic sectors, which probably, for example, blockchain, crypto, they don't have a big presence in India and even across the world, it's just emerging, right? Then there are regulatory concerns. So there will be certain these themes that are, pretty new and still in a huge state of change. So I was actually, trying to bring that point actually and wanted your thought on that.
Yes. So when you look at just examples of what you indicated, right? without giving a specific view on a particular scheme. Our thought around this is that one has to spend a lot of time when one is buying into thematic and sectoral alternatives to look at the sustainability of what is going to drive the business performance of companies in those particular sectors. And therefore, the net outcome that you will get as an investor ultimately will depend on how companies in that particular space, you know, evolve over a period of time. For a lot of retail investors, their ability to allocate capital to these kind of options, which are relatively untested, will tend to be constrained because their ability to be able to handle significant downsides, which could well happen because the nature of thematic and sectoral options, especially in sort of untested spaces, is that you can see very large drawdowns that can happen at particular points. And, you know, for a lot of investors who may have been looking at some of these sort of options in 2017, they would remember that there was a very large drawdown that took place at that point as well. So I would think that besides understanding what is happening in there, the ability to handle downside risk is very, very crucial. Because what we find is that when something starts falling, the first 10% or 15% or 20% is relatively easier to handle. When you start losing 30, 40, 50% of your capital, even if it is temporary, there is a sense of panic which tends to come in. And what then one tends to do is bail out because one never really had conviction in what one was investing in and just was part of a herd which was participating in that particular opportunity. So very, very important to be clear why you're investing, how long will you stay invested, what would you do if, you know, things fell by 50%, as hard as it is to imagine for investors in this environment that anything can fall by 50%. I think you have to ask yourself that question well before it happens so that you don't react in a manner where you will look back at it and have a sense of regret that I should not have done this.
You know, lastly, if you have to kind of give a word of advice to, you know, our listeners, you know, how many funds are enough for an investor, for a retail investor to get a well-diversified portfolio? Of course, they can't go into buying, you know, every next NFO. So, you know, what should be that sort of capping? And of course, you know, the practicality of tracking each fund also becomes difficult after a point. So yeah, any, you know, last word on that?
Yeah, so our thought is anywhere between 10 to 12 schemes are typically good enough for investors to diversify. The reason why we say that is because an investor portfolio will typically have, number one, multiple asset classes, equity, debt, gold, real estate, for example. And there are, you know, products available within the mutual fund category for each of these asset classes. Number two is within the category itself, say, for example, equity, you would have the first breakup, which is international and domestic. And then within that, you could be making certain choices. So our belief is that 10 to 12 schemes will give you a well-diversified portfolio. We know a lot of people tend to, you know, believe that just 3 to 4 schemes are good enough. But we think that doesn't give enough diversification. And at the same time, going beyond that, in our view, adds very limited additional benefits. And therefore, you know, 10 to 12 number is ideally what one should be targeting when one is putting this portfolio together.
And too many funds can also lead to then too many overlaps. So you are not technically really diversifying. So that can also
be. Absolutely. That's very true.
Right. Sure. Thanks, Vishal. I think that, you know, sums up our conversation pretty well. Thanks a lot for joining us. You know, with so many NFOs coming thick and fast, it's important that investors, you know, are able to make sense of this. So I think this will help towards that. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was all the time we had for today's podcast. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in and keep listening to Simply Save. For any feedback, do write into us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news and views, log on to moneycontrol.com.